Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Coming up later this hour, how Americans project their own anxieties and fears onto Hillary Clinton. Some of that is about her role as an ambitious professional woman, and my first guest this hour is all about that topic. Think about Elizabeth Edwards and Hillary Clinton, two professional women who managed to keep their careers alive while raising children. But should all American women follow in their footsteps? The answer, my guest says, is an emphatic yes. Joining me now is Leslie Bennett. She's a contributing editor at Vanity Fair. She's the author now of The Feminine Mistake, Are We Giving Up Too Much?, which was just published by Voice Hyperion. Leslie Bennett, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
What is the feminine mistake of your title?
Well, as far as my reporting and an awful lot of other research would indicate, the feminine mistake is making the lifestyle choice to give up your career and stay home and raise your children and assume that it's safe to depend on a man to support you, a partner of any kind. Because this is generally portrayed as something that reduces this, you know, gets rid of the stress of the juggling act. We all know it's stressful to balance work and family. But I think women rarely think about the enormous economic risks of giving up their own financial self-sufficiency to stay home and become full-time homemakers. And the truth is that the majority of these women will eventually end up on the wrong side of the odds. If you look at the various risk factors, more than half of them will get divorced, but others will become widowed. The average age of widowhood in America is only 55. Many will have husbands who lose their jobs. Husbands can become sick or incapacitated. And all of these challenges arise during the course of normal lives. They're not, something uncommon. In fact, most people encounter one or another over the course of a lifetime.
So who are you writing this book for? Because Bureau of Labor Statistics figures show that what we saw is something like 75% of mothers who have school-age children are already working outside the home.
It's less than that. It's about 70.
And census numbers show no increase in mothers exiting the workforce. So this
that actually isn't true. For nearly 30 years, there was increasing participation of women in the labor force, and in the last few years, that trend has turned around, and women have been leaving the labor force in record numbers. So the opting out phenomenon really is a trend. The Wall Street Journal reported a couple of months ago that this trend has been much broader and deeper than previously suspected. It's not just among the privileged; it's at all socioeconomic levels. So this really is happening, and I became alarmed because the coverage of this whole phenomenon typically does not mention the economics of it. And so what I was seeing was that, you know, women in their 30s might say, oh, it's a great idea to be a stay-at-home mom. I'm so glad I don't have to juggle and, you know, worry about work and I can focus on my children. But by the time women get into their 40s and 50s, many of them have lost their partners. Two-thirds of American women do not have partners by the time they're 60. And yet women are routinely these days living into their 80s and 90s, many without adequate financial resources. And so I was seeing a lot of the casualties, and I became alarmed that women were not being given the right kind of information or enough information about various things, including the difficulties of opting back in. People don't anticipate it's going to be as hard as it is. So part of the book was designed to give women the facts so they could make informed decisions. But the other part was the good news about working. We hear so much about the stress of the juggling act, but the truth is that there's an enormous amount of social science research that shows that working women are happier than full-time homemakers. When full-time homemakers return to the workforce, their mental and emotional health improves significantly. And the really surprising thing is that working women are also healthier than full-time homemakers.
Well, I want to follow up on some of those things, but I also want to open up the phones. At this time of day, we have a lot of stay-at-home moms and some stay-at-home dads as well. So I'm sure some of you want to talk to Leslie Bennett. Anyone else may call as well. Leslie Bennett's author of The Feminine Mistake, Are We Giving Up Too Much? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. First, maybe you'll say it's just semantic, but you keep saying working women or working mothers, and
working for pay is what I mean. You know, I'm sick of the whole argument that people who, you know, stay home also work. I mean, I am a mother. I have two teenage children. I've run my household with very little help for 20 years. And of course, housework is work, but nobody pays you for it. So by working women, I mean women who get paid for what they do. That's the bottom line. If you are not being paid, you can't support yourself at a moment's notice, which is the situation that many women find themselves in.
And how broad the so-called opt-out revolution is, are you not talking overwhelmingly to upper-middle-class women and higher? Because the complaint we most often seem to hear from working-class women and middle-middle-class women is that they have no choice but to go to work and help make ends meet in their families with two incomes in this day and age. And so this whole debate is happening in feminist circles above their heads.
I thought that this would be the case when I started reporting this book, and I was really astonished to find what, as I said, the new demographic data does show, which is that this is occurring at every level. I mean, I was talking to women who, you know, had minimum wage jobs who still at, you know, the first moment they thought they could do it, quit their jobs to stay home, even though their husbands earned very little money and it would further impoverish the families. Staying home is the aspirational model for a lot of women, whether they're privileged or not. And many women look at work as something that, you know, if you don't have to work, in other words, just for the money, there's no reason to do it. And this fails to take into consideration the fact that work has an enormous array of benefits that it brings women in terms of, you know, obviously, if you have have found meaningful work and an interesting career, the benefits are greater. You have intellectual stimulation and creative satisfaction. But for any woman, having her own paycheck means that she has options in the world. She has power. She has leverage. She even has more power in her marriage.
But doesn't that devalue the work of full-time motherhood? I know women who say that, you know, they've had a lot of stress reduction since they left the workplace, especially if they have young children at home. They find it extremely fulfilling. They find it extremely meaningful, just as if they were lawyers or doctors or anything else. And the mental health factor that you bring up for them is, you know, is much more positive once they leave the workforce.
I'm not making any value judgments. My argument is essentially about the risks of staying at home is an economic argument. If you are an heiress and your parents were billionaires and you were provided for should you live to be 100, then, you know, do whatever you want and I'm happy for you. But what I have found as a reporter for 36 years interviewing women all over the country is that most women leave the workforce without understanding how severe the economic risks are going to be and how difficult it will be for them to come back into the workforce when they need to. They have a false sense of security about that, and then they get absolutely blindsided by the challenges. So,
but before we take some phone calls, aren't you going beyond just an economic argument and in fact making a value judgment? In your book, you write, quote, "I am a mother all the time, and being a mother constitutes a crucial part of my identity. But that fact does not define the entirety of who I am. For many full-time moms, however, motherhood has become far more than a facet of their lives. It describes their identities in a way that it could never describe the totality of my own," unquote. Now, doesn't that set up an us or them dichotomy?
Well, I meant that as a description. I think that many full-time mothers would agree with that description. The problem with it is that children grow up very quickly. And in my book, I talk about something I call the 15-year paradigm. If you have a couple of kids 2 or 3 years apart, which is a typical American family these days, the period of really intensive hands-on mothering is 15 years or less. And yet women's adult lifespans routinely these days are 60 or 70 years. So for the sake of those few years at home, women are making choices whose consequences mm-hmm. are irrevocable.
But you seem to be saying in that passage that you have a depth that they lack.
It's not a matter of depth. It's a different dimension. I certainly have a different dimension of my identity as somebody who has a career and, you know, an intellectual life that I find extremely nourishing that somebody who's a full-time homemaker doesn't have. And I also have economic resources because when my husband lost his job last year and was out of work for 6 months, I was able to support our family. If I'd been a stay-at-home mom, we might have lost our home, and we would certainly have had to say to our college-bound daughter, you're going to need to rethink your plans. But as it was a temporary inconvenience rather than the kind of catastrophe that such things often are for people in families where there's a single breadwinner. Those families are very vulnerable.
Leslie Bennett, journalist and mother of two teenagers, my guest on WNYC. Her new book is The Feminine Mistake, Are We Giving Up Too Much? Not surprisingly, our lines are packed. And Felicia in Pelham, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that I think that Ms. Bennett makes the same mistakes in her book that Linda Hirschman has made in her very similar book. First, I think she dramatically underestimates the enjoyment that women can get from staying at home and being with children and doing things in their community. It's not only washing dishes and wiping noses. There are many, many stay-at-home mothers add immeasurably to their community through volunteerism. Second, I think she dramatically overestimates the enjoyment that most of us get or got from our jobs. I mean, it's great if you have a great gig that's intellectually fulfilling, but for most of us, it's a job. And it's work, and it's not life. It's what you do to fund the rest of your life.
Leslie, go ahead.
May I ask you a couple of questions?
Of course.
Did you read my book?
I have not yet had a chance.
And so how would you know the things that you've just said?
Well, I've read...
You've read news coverage of it by people who often actually say that they haven't read it. Most of the Amazon reader reviews that people have posted about my book have said, I haven't read the book, but I'm really mad at her for writing it, and I don't intend to read it, and you shouldn't read it either. Frankly, I'm a little sick of people commenting on my book, sounding authoritative, who haven't read it, because you are misperceiving what's actually in the book.
Specifically, what did she misperceive in her question?
Well, I talk a great deal about the satisfactions of motherhood. I am a mother. I talk about the fact that my children have always been my own top priority. And my book is extremely different from Linda Hirschman's. Linda Hirschman basically says, get to work. The title is Get to Work. And she says, go to work because you're an idiot if you don't. What I'm saying is that women who give up work and leave themselves unable to earn a living at a moment's notice are putting themselves in grave danger, danger that will catch up with most of them along the way. This
Felicia,
is not a value discussion about motherhood.
It's a narrow argument about financial risk is the way you're portraying it now.
That's half the book. The other half of the book is the good news part. Working women are very tired of being told that they're bad moms because they work. We are taking care of our families in other ways than stay-at-home moms are, as well as many of the same ways. I make a homemade dinner for my children every night of the year, which a lot of stay-at-home moms I know don't do. So I think that, you know, many working mothers have found this book to give them a lot of validation. People are calling me weeping at all hours of the day and night saying, thank God somebody finally wrote that we're not bad mothers. But really, to go back to your point, I'm not devaluing motherhood, and maybe if you had read my book, you would know that.
Felicia, go ahead. You wanted to come back.
Yes, I did. Thank you, Brian. Well, first I'd say that I'm a bit saddened that Ms. Bennett immediately decides that I got my information from Amazon rather than from any more Tony or posh kinds of reviews. And I'd also add that I never attacked working mothers' credentials as mothers either. I'm not sure where that digression came from. I would say, though, that I think that the whole, everything that I've heard, let's just stick to what I've heard firsthand thus far this morning, doesn't answer for me what is the third and most essential point, that for many of us, it's a perfectly rational response to corporate culture, which is not fun and not exciting for most of us, to say, hey, thank goodness I have the option to opt out. I'm going to. Because, you know, it's not so wonderful. I was working around, my hours were terrible. I was stressed all the time when I was working outside the home. And this is much more satisfying. I'm aware of the risks, and I don't like that Ms. Bennett is infantilizing women by assuming that we don't know the risks or that we haven't made an escape plan.
I'm not infantilizing them, but I've interviewed hundreds of women, and all of the social scientists who have studied the opting out phenomenon have said that these women typically leave the workforce without ever considering the risks. There is a great deal of research that backs up what I'm saying. I'm talking about my findings, not my opinions. It's all in the book.
Thank you for your call, Felicia. I'm going to move on. Did you get a little defensive there when you said that you make dinner every night?
Well, you know, I'm I'm really tired. You know, I began this process with an interview on the Today Show on April 3rd, which was the publication date, and they were flooded with negative comments afterward from women who assumed that because I'm saying that marriage is not a safe bet to sustain women through the course of a lifetime, that I must be, all the emails said I must be divorced, bitter, lonely, I'd been dumped by my husband, I'd been angry, and obviously I don't have children. None of those things are true. I've been married nearly 20 years to my husband. I have two wonderful kids. We have a you know, very happy home life. But people are making these uninformed assumptions. Mm-hmm. And, can I just speak to Felicia's point about corporate culture? This is absolutely true. The research also shows that women who opt out typically say, oh, I have to go home and take care of my children. But when you probe deeper, which many of the sociologists who have studied this have done, what you find out is that they were frustrated or unsatisfied with their careers, or they had never thought seriously enough about their careers to find something they had a real passion for. And really, staying home with the kids was just an excuse for getting out of something that they hated. Many of the women I interviewed said, I just hated my career. I went to law school, but I didn't like being a lawyer or whatever. You know, we're raising girls very differently in this culture than we are boys, and it's very dangerous for girls. Boys understand that they're going to have to spend a lifetime supporting themselves, and they're encouraged to think about that. But girls are always given this escape clause, you can always quit it and go home. And the fact that it doesn't work out well for most of them somehow gets left out of the discussion.
Right.
So this is not about whether you're happy at home. Are you safe? If your husband got run over by a bus tomorrow, what would you do? If you can't answer that question, then, you know, it requires some thought.
But let me press Felicia's point about, you know, how crappy the corporate world can be. The New York Times review of your book said, quote, most of the women she interviews live in the Northeast and the Midwest.
That was entirely inaccurate.
Work in the fields of law, media, and finance.
Not true.
Because it doesn't take into account.
I talked to women who worked at Walmart, women who worked at McDonald's, mm-hmm. women who worked as seamstresses in, you know, Indiana, women who worked as cleaning ladies in Michigan. That was simply not a factual statement.
We'll continue in a minute with Leslie Bennett, author of The Feminine Mistake, Are We Giving Up Too Much? We will bring in the topic of men. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer, WNYC, with Leslie Bennett, author of The Feminine Mistake, Are We Giving Up Too Much? Here's an email that says, why don't these new feminist writers mention the obligation of fathers to do more to bring up children? Stay-at-home fathers, daycare, etc. Comment, please.
Well, again, you know, I don't know why they think I don't bring it up. There's a great deal in my book about the role of fathers. And if, again, somebody had actually read my book before commenting on it, they would know that I really feel that men are the key to solving a lot of these problems. Women feel unbearable stress about being in the labor force when they also have to do the dreaded second shift of all the domestic and childcare responsibilities at home. And, you know, if women are sharing the breadwinning, which I think women must do in the 21st century in order to protect themselves and their children, then men just have to step up to the plate and do more. I think a lot of people feel hopeless about this, but in fact, the trends are that men are doing far more than they used to a generation or two ago in terms of sharing all these things. The trend is very much towards more egalitarian marriages. This is a model that protects everybody better. There are great benefits for children. For example, when kids do housework with their fathers, research shows that those children have less depression, more friends, and do better in school. Egalitarian marriage really is a model that works. And, you know, it reduces the stress on women and, you know, it helps everybody.
But do you think that people can't have an egalitarian marriage if one partner stays home or makes less money or works less? What if a child or elderly relative has special needs? Is it in all cases better to keep a full-time job than to care for that dependent relative? And can't the marriage be egalitarian as defined by that couple still?
I'm not writing any prescriptions, and I wouldn't dream of being presumptuous enough to comment about marriages that I don't know. What the research shows is that money gives women power and leverage within their marriages as well as in the outside world, and that there is a tremendous imbalance of power when women are not earning income. Now, if it's a good marriage and the husband has a good, kind, generous soul, the woman may not feel acutely the imbalance of power. But many men do use money as a way of controlling their wives. Research also shows that there's a tremendous amount of dishonesty around monetary issues in marriages. Women lie and conceal purchases because they feel they have to hide them from their husbands. There's, you know, these things are a battleground in many marriages because of the imbalance of power. But again, I'm talking about research findings by sociologists. I'm not, you know, dismissing anybody's individual marriage.
Wendy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I have just two questions. I haven't read the book, and so they may be addressed there. But my first question is basically with two people in, say, professional full-time jobs, with the demands that those have today, my first question is, who other than nannies raises these kids? And then the second question I have, I hope I'm not mistaking you with Linda Hirschman, but I think you wrote a op-ed piece recently in the New York Times.
No, that was Linda Hirschman.
Okay, so then I won't ask that question.
Okay, what about her first question?
But also to say is that, you know, because I think you could probably address this too.
Yeah,
but I'm in my mid-30s. I'm a lawyer. And, you know, I think my current sort of generation or that decade, you know, we really are kind of coming up with this sort of this clash between ideals we had about who we could be, and then we're looking at people who are, say, 10, 15 years older than us who broke through and they're, you know, they're partners and they have families and they have nannies, and we don't want to be them.
Well, you know, you have to make your own choices based on your own values and your own needs. And what you're talking about really is a tremendously difficult challenge for most couples. Balancing two careers is tough. I would never deny that it's tough. But I think one of the things I've noticed about younger women is that they have a very absolutist, black and white, either or perception of these things. You know, if I can't be a partner at a major Wall Street law firm making millions of dollars a year and working brutal hours, then I can't be a lawyer and I might as well go home. The fact is that in the baby boom generation, millions of women have had satisfying careers and maintained their financial viability and helped to support their families while raising children. This can be done. I know lots of lawyers who have done it and who have made compromises. We've all made compromises in order to be able to do this. So, you know, there are some what are called these days in corporate parlance extreme jobs that are not very forgiving for the needs of families, either if men or women have them. So I wouldn't recommend those jobs. I think that some of those fields are difficult, but as a lawyer, you can develop an area of expertise and go, you know, to a small firm or a nonprofit or to a corporate job. There are lots of things that people I've known and interviewed have done in order to address these problems.
And what about the women who are hiring nannies or using daycare for their children? What about the caretakers? What's the distinction? Is it?
Well, it's very interesting that, you know, full-time moms often act as if other caregivers are necessarily inferior. I find there's a very strong strain of elitism in the way that this is often discussed. And the truth is that in America, more than 80% of women are happy with their child care arrangements. Many women use what's called patchwork child care, where you have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. You know, some people have extended family, relatives, a little bit of daycare or babysitter, au pair, nanny, whatever. But this stereotype that working women simply hand off their children either to warehouse them in substandard daycare or give them to a nanny who's the person who raises the child is really very offensive. I mean, I raised my children. I had a wonderful babysitter who helped me. But,
intuitively,
you know, parents raise their kids.
Intuitively, wouldn't there be a quality of care difference? And statistically, I don't know how much has been measured with respect to nannies or how they would measure outcomes, but there are many wonderful nannies in the world, many wonderful daycare workers, but statistically, the quality of care, one could argue, is going to be different and lower when you hire somebody who sees it as a job than if you're doing it with your own kid.
I do not believe that that is the case, necessarily the case. And in fact, sociologists and other social science researchers have been studying the children of working mothers and the children of full-time mothers for more than 40 years, comparing the two groups and trying to prove that the children of full-time mothers do better. And they don't. The results have been extremely consistent for nearly half a century.
Well,
there is no advantage to children in having full-time mothers. The things that predict the outcomes with how kids turn out are other factors entirely, such as a parent's consistent emotional availability. But if a nanny is the one who is picking up your child at school and taking them to, you know, the little league practice, this is not something that's inherently harmful to your child.
There
and very quickly, children have long days out at school.
There was a study.
They're not home.
There was a study just reported a few weeks ago. The headline in the New York Times reads, "Poor behavior is linked to time in daycare." This is from March 26th. And it begins, quote, "A much-anticipated report from the largest and longest-running study of American childcare has found that keeping a preschooler in a daycare center for a year or more increased the likelihood that the child would become disruptive in class." Then it says the effect was slight, but the finding held up regardless of the child's sex or family income and regardless of the quality of the daycare center.
You may not realize that that story has been pointed to ever since as a notorious example of biased and inaccurate coverage. It was dissected almost immediately in an excellent explication in Salon.com. They completely misrepresented the findings of that study, which in fact showed that there are a lot of benefits, socialization and otherwise, for children in daycare, and that the slight differential that they talked about, took completely out of context and blew completely out of proportion. So that story in media circles is being held up these days as a perfect example of the kind of bias that demonizes childcare and frightens women into thinking that they have no choice other than to give up their jobs and stay home.
In fact, we saw that on Huffington Post last month. You accused the New York Times of, quote, going out of its way to disparage my book. And that, quote, "the marginalization of women and women's issues in the pages of the newspaper of record has become so egregious that it doesn't take a paranoid conspiracy theorist to wonder what its editors are thinking," unquote. So is there a vast right-wing media conspiracy at the New York Times?
No, I worked there for 10 years. It's a very, very good newspaper, and I don't think anybody thinks it's a right-wing newspaper. But on women's issues, they have notoriously done very bad work. The whole opt-out phenomenon became known as that because of a Sunday magazine cover story called The Opt-Out Revolution that looked at a few Princeton classmates of the writer and talked about, you know, their lives at home. And as many studies have since pointed out, never talked about the economics of this decision and never talked about the fact that, you know, a lot of these people would end up being divorced and would have significant problems in their later life. Similarly, the front page piece on the New York Times about Yale women saying they were going to give up their careers and stay home was immediately attacked for its completely specious methodology. This was, you know, your typical trend story where you talk to a handful of people and then write something as if it's a national trend. It's simply shoddy journalism.
Leslie Bennett's author of The Feminine Mistake, Are We Giving Up Too Much? My guest on WNYC, and Mary Beth in Ocean Grove. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
Leslie, I have not read your book, but I have been reading the reviews, so I'll admit that right up front. And it struck an immediate chord with me for a couple of reasons. Let me just tell you my situation. I had 30 years as a lawyer and then as a consultant in a professional consulting firm. At age 47, I adopted my first child, and I adopted my second one about 6 years later. And it was very interesting to me to see the subtle but real changes that I felt in the workforce the moment I became a mother. So I just want to put that out there. It became harder to be in the workforce.
Because of people's attitudes towards you?
It was a subtle thing, yes. It was people's attitudes. It was also the way benefits work. Now, part of it is because I'm single, and I think benefits are really for families with two parents.
So because our time is short, is your point that more of this should be focused at the workplace and maybe the court system and other institutions to make sure that women get an even shake rather than focusing on the women themselves?
I have 2 points. Number one, I think the economic point that you make is incredibly valid. And I see this now that I took early retirement, by the way, and I'm home now with my two kids. And I do see women who've been home for 10 or 12 years and think they're going to walk back in the workforce and they are realizing they're in for a rude awakening. The second thing is, it is very difficult, I think, for mothers to be in the workforce. I think corporations, not to do what you're saying, to go to a smaller firm, to, you know, hang out your own shingle, I think all those things are difficult, but most of us work in corporations. And the fact is, I think corporate America is not very
You're absolutely
welcoming.
Right. You are absolutely right. And one of the points that I make in my book is progress has stalled out in terms of trying to get some changes to make a more family-friendly workplace. And one of the main reasons that progress has stalled out is that women are not pushing for it. They're leaving the workforce to go home instead of demanding changes that will benefit both men and women. Everybody who's a parent, more than 80% of women are parents. We all need these changes. They're good for husbands, they're good for wives, they're good for kids. But until men and women band together to start insisting that our leaders address these questions and that corporate America address these questions, it's not going to happen. It's frankly a national disgrace that the United States has such a poor record on these issues. Every other Western industrialized nation puts the United States to shame in terms of family-friendly policies. The assumption in America, it has been that, you know, workers are men and they have wives to take care of everything else. And many of us have not only children to take care of, but aging elderly parents. So the caretaking needs go in two different directions, and they're tremendously burdensome for people. But I think it's time for people to stop trying to find, you know, scapegoats about these issues and start really working to get things changed, because it's necessary for everyone.
Kim in Mountain Lakes, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kim.
Hi, thank you. I agree with this conversation. I think it's invaluable dialogue. I had my own company, and when I had my second child, I decided to stay home because my husband's hours had increased tremendously, and I sold my company. And although I love being with my kids, I have been struggling for 5 years to figure out some way to go back into the workforce that still enables me to fit my schedule with my kids.
Is it a rude awakening to you? We're trying to return to the workplace, and it's a lot harder than you expected it to be?
Well, I've also made the decision that I didn't want to return to exactly what I was doing because of the hours, and I had clients to service, and that wasn't really going to fit with being home with my kids and being available. So I think part of it is my choice as well. But I think the other side of it is that I do feel like it is now up to me to carve out a very specific role and maybe starting, again, my own company so that I can have that flexibility. And I think this dialogue is so important because I have two little girls, and I have to be quite honest. I would tell them not to leave the workforce. I may guide them at some point with certain career choices that might fit with having a family, but I would encourage them to keep working.
I think it's crucial to raise girls to think about these things. We are dooming our daughters if we raise them to think that somebody is going to take care of them for their adult lives. The Prince Charming fantasy is a great fairy tale, but it doesn't play out that way in the lives of most women. And so we are really sentencing them to lives of tremendous vulnerability and hardship if we lead them to expect that some man is going to take care of this. They need to find careers that will enable them to have work that they care about, to support themselves, and to raise families. And they need to think about that from the outset.
Kim, thank you very much. We just have a minute left. You know, it's very rare for an author to come on the show and get so upset about the fact that some of the callers making comments have not read their book.
There's been a shooting war in the blogosphere since before this book was published. Hundreds and hundreds of women have been attacking me, criticizing me personally, and making judgments about me and my family. They write things like, either I don't have children or my children must be scarred and dysfunctional because I've written about the economic risks of depending on marriage. And frankly, I'm just fed up. I wish that, you know, I have no objection to people asking questions and saying I haven't read the book. Nobody has to read the book. But I wrote the book as a reporter. I've been a reporter for 36 years. I was just trying to provide helpful information for women because I was seeing so many women end up as casualties of economic dependency. And I was very concerned about it, you know, and I'm being demonized all over the place. And people are saying, well, you said this and you said that, who haven't read the book and don't know what I said. So I apologize for my feeling of exasperation, but I'm really tired of it. If you're interested in the issues, go read the book. It's a book of reporting. It's not my opinion.
The book is The Feminine Mistake: Are We Giving Up Too Much? The author is Leslie Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T-S. The publisher is Voice Hyperion. Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And in a minute, Jack Hitt from Harper's Magazine on one specific working mother. His article is about public perceptions of Hillary Clinton, from the Lady Macbeth Hillary to the Eleanor Roosevelt Hillary to the Lisa Simpson Hillary. Stay with us.